We certainly have been blessed these last few weeks with amazing musical performances. Thank you so much, Frank the Dog, for being here today. Our scripture passage today comes from Matthew chapter 20, verses 1 through 13. Please listen for the word of God. For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire laborers for his vineyard. After agreeing with the laborers for the usual daily wage, he sent them into his vineyard. When he went out about 9 o'clock, he saw others standing idle in the marketplace, and he said to them, "You also go into the vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went. When he went out again at about noon and again at 3 o'clock, he did the same. At about 5 o'clock, he went out and found others standing around, and he said to them, "Why are you standing here idle all day?" They said to him, "Because no one has hired us." He replied, "You also go into the vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his manager, "Call the laborers and give them their pay, beginning with the last and then going to the first." When those hired about 5 o'clock came, each of them received the usual daily wage. Now, when the first came, they thought they would receive more. But each of them also received the usual daily wage. And when they received it, they grumbled against the landowner, saying, "These last worked only 1 hour, and you have made them equal to us, who have borne the burden of the day and the scorching heat?" But he replied to one of them, "Friend, I am doing you no wrong. Did you not agree with me for the usual daily wage? Take what belongs to you and go. I choose to give to this last the same as I gave to you. Am I not allowed to do what I choose with what belongs to me? Or are you envious because I am generous? So the last will be first, and the first will be last." I'm dressed down a little bit today. It's Lou's last day on vacation. I thought I would take off the suit. It's nice. And this is the last sermon I'll be preaching in July. And we've been going through these parables. And this is one of my favorite parables for a lot of reasons, one of which is because it's a hard one for me to understand and explain. But I think we can get a good picture of it. I'm sure most of you, if not all of you, I'm sure all of you, have at some point worked on a group project. And you know that feeling when the teacher assigns you to your group and you look around and you see who's in your group and you immediately know, great, I'm going to be the one that has to do all the work for this project. It always seems that way. Group projects, it always seems to fall on one person the most. No matter how hard you try and divvy up the work so that everyone has a fair share, it always falls on one person. And I don't know why, but to me it always feels like it's me, even if it's not. It just seems that I'm always the one stuck with the short end of the straw. And the most frustrating thing about group projects is you all get the same grade at the end, or the same result happens at the end of the project, no matter who did what. And this is just one of the facts of life. I remember one project in fifth grade, it was awful. I did my part, and then somebody called me and said, "Hey, since you're doing this, you might as well do this too." And I said, "All right, fine." And then the next person said, "Oh, Brett's doing all the work. Let's just give him all the work." And it piles up, and we did this presentation. I wrote up everybody's part, made this great poster. And it was, I must say, it was quite a good project. You can imagine what the impact it had. This is fifth grade. And we all got an A, and I was furious at the end because they did nothing. And there they are with their A. But I remember thinking, well, this is fifth grade. We won't have to do any stupid group projects in sixth grade. Seventh grade, eighth grade. I just finished 19th grade. For those of you still in school, there are over 19 grades, so look forward to that. But you have to do group projects in all of them. And they don't end there. My dad has a lot of funny stories about group projects that he worked on when he was working in the city at a bank. And they just continue. And this is sort of what's happening here. We see this story about one who works at the crack of dawn. They go out first thing in the morning, and they work through the day. It's not like a group project. It's hard, back-breaking work. You're laboring in the sun in a vineyard, bending over, hoeing the ground, picking grapes. And they work all day. And yet, there are also people that come and join them in the evening. It's cooler out. The sun has started to go down. It's a little nicer. There's less to do. The hard work's already been done. And yet, at the end of the day, they get the same amount. And this rubs us the wrong way, because this isn't the way that we operate, right? We live in this reward-driven system, right? Peter showed us that we had so many great answers, and they all got their reward, which was very nice. And now those rewards served a purpose. They were meant to share them with their neighbors. So that's a different kind of reward, and we're going to get to that. But we're living in a reward-driven system. It's very basic. We do something good, we get a reward. We do something bad, or we just do something okay, and we either get no reward, or we get punished or in trouble, what have you. And this is the interesting thing about Matthew's gospel. Matthew's gospel allows us to keep this image of reward-based thinking at the forefront of our mind, except for there's a few places where Matthew stresses that this is not actually how the gospel works. And it makes those places so powerful. And we get two of them right in a row here. Matthew 19 and Matthew 20, they're connected. Matthew 19, of course, is the story of the rich young man who comes up to Jesus and he says, "Jesus, what must I do to enter in the kingdom of heaven?" And Jesus sort of writes him off. He says, "Well, follow the commandments." And he sort of walks away. And the rich young man calls after him and says, "Oh, I have done." And Jesus kind of turns around and goes, "Oh, that's good. That's very impressive. It's a hard thing." And then Jesus lists the commandments he was supposed to follow. And it even includes love your neighbor as yourself. There's a lot of difficult commandments that he lists. And this rich young man has done them. And it's a very impressive feat. But the rich young man, he's not really comfortable with that. He suspects he needs to do something more. So he asks Jesus, he says to him, "Jesus, what good thing do I have to do?" And Jesus responds by saying, "The only thing that is good in itself is God. There's nothing you can do that is good." And this sort of, the rich young man doesn't understand, but he then replies, "Okay, well, but give me something to do. I need something concrete." So Jesus says, "Fine, sell all you have and come follow me." And the young man can't do this, and this prompts Jesus to say, "Therefore I say unto you, it is harder for a rich man to enter into the kingdom of heaven than it is for a camel to pass through the eye of a needle." And this, of course, gets the disciples all worried, and they say, "Well, what about us? What's going to happen to us? We sold everything we had, and we're following you. What does that mean for us?" And Jesus says, "It is impossible for man, but with God, all things are possible." The disciples still don't really understand. They still have to ask. Peter then asks specifically, "Okay, yeah, but what are we going to get? What awaits us?" Again, even then, they had this rewards-based thinking. Everything that they do, they gave up a lot of their life to follow Christ, and they expect recompense. They want something in return. And we're used to this. We're taught this as well. It's only natural, then, that we feel dissatisfied with this parable of the landowner. Why should somebody else get credit for work I've done? I worked harder. I did better work. I worked longer. Shouldn't I get more? And that's why a lot of times I find myself identifying with verse 12, those who grumble against the manager in the end, those who started work at the crack of dawn, which also puts me in a difficult position. When you think about who those people are in the story, it's quite presumptive to assume that you are the one who got up at the crack of dawn to start this very hard work. Who am I to say the work that I've done for Christ? And that's why I struggle with this passage so much, especially its implications. We know immediately that this is a story about the kingdom of heaven. I think so often we get distracted by the quality of Jesus' storytelling. He weaves such a great tale that we sort of get sucked into it when in fact we forget sometimes that he's teaching us a lesson here. Now, the story about the landowner, this is about the kingdom of heaven. What does the kingdom of heaven look like? How do you get there? And it's quite powerful when you think about it. Those who got up at the crack of dawn to start this work, the first thing, if we think about this as the kingdom of heaven, the first thing they did when they were able to comprehend, the first time they were presented with Christ in a way that they could accept and trust in Christ, they immediately followed. We can think of them as the disciples, the ones who, when they were first told to come follow me, they were the ones who said yes. They dropped and they left. Not the rich young man who couldn't sell all he had, but Peter, say. Even though it happened later in life, the first time that they're presented with it, doesn't matter at what stage, the first time they're presented with it, they follow. And then we have the ones at 9 o'clock who work. And that's still pretty good. That's acceptable. I mean, today our business days, they start at 9. So if you're at work at 9, you know, that's great. I mean, we can expect that this is an honorable and well-put-together person who is, with reasonable timeliness, responding to this call of Christ. And then we have the people at noon, which, okay, you slept in, you had a lunch, and you took your time, and you sort of ambled over to the marketplace, and said, okay, yeah, I'm here now, okay. And then you have the people at 3, and it's not really very excusable. Who goes at 3? Who shows up to their job at 3 o'clock? It seems you might not have that job for very long. And then the ones at 5, I mean, the gall. Why would you show up at 5? You might as well not go. And yet they do. They do go. They make that journey. The implication of this is that no matter what stage you are in your life, it doesn't matter whether you're in the twilight of your days, if it's 5 o'clock in your life, and you make the journey to find and reach out to Christ, that is the key here. And the key to this whole idea of the landowner's vineyard, this is the whole idea of grace. And I want to make a connection between the daily wage and grace. But we have to be careful here. I don't want to make the confusion that grace is a payment of sorts. It's not a wage in the traditional sense, but this is also not a story in the traditional sense. This is not a typical story where they get up and work and are paid. This is a story about grace in the kingdom of heaven. So therefore, our wage here, we're going to associate it with grace. But grace is an interesting concept. It can be a very simple concept. We're taught that grace is simple in that there's nothing we can do to deserve or earn it. It is a free gift of God. But it is at the same time a very complex subject. It's a famous German philosopher, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. He wrote in the 1920s through the 1940s up until his death. He was captured in 1943, arrested for an attempt to assassinate Hitler, and was then executed in a concentration camp in 1945. And he wrote all throughout his imprisonment. And he published a book in 1937, I think it was, called The Cost of Discipleship. And he talks about two forms of grace. He talks about cheap grace and costly grace. And this is Bonhoeffer. Cheap grace is the deadly enemy of our church. We are fighting today for costly grace. Cheap grace means grace sold on the market like cheap jack's wares. I don't know what a cheap jack is, but it's, you know, like a door-to-door salesman is trying to pull one over on you, selling you something that's looks fancy but isn't really worth anything. Maybe those late night paid television ads where they try and sell you a bunch of knives. Cheap grace, this is Bonhoeffer again, is represented as the church's inexhaustible treasure from which she showers blessings without asking questions or fixing limits. It is grace without discipleship. It is grace without the cross. It is grace without Jesus Christ. This is the grace that a lot of times is pandered around in churches. It's just saying, oh, you're here, congratulations, you get grace. It can be related to many things that we see in the media and we see in a lot of churches today. Costly grace, continues Bonhoeffer, is the gospel which must be sought again and again. It is the gift which must be asked for. It is costly because it calls us to follow, and it is grace because it calls us to follow Jesus Christ. It costs a person their life, and it is grace because it gives a person the only true life. If we return to our parable, we might think that this, we might mistake it for an example of cheap grace. We see the workers who start at 5 and we think, oh, well, they're just trying to pull one over on the landowner. They just want to get a free day's wage. But this is not what Jesus is trying to tell us. These workers, we're going to start with the workers who show up at 5. They show up at 5, yes. But they do show up. This is not the only vineyard, this landowner's vineyard. It's not the only vineyard. When the landowner goes to them, he says, why are you still here? And they say, no one else has hired us today. And probably because they're known to be lazy and they show up for work at 5, who's going to hire them? But they did seek out this market. Maybe they knew that the landowner makes multiple trips to the market throughout the day, no matter what time it is. Maybe they knew his reputation of being generous. Maybe they knew they would find help if they worked even for an hour or two. But the landowner does not tell them what they'll get. When he goes and he addresses the people at 5, he says, come and work in my vineyard. Now, the people at the beginning of the day, he says, you come work for me, I will pay you the usual daily wage. The people at 9, he tells them, I will pay you whatever is right. People at noon or 3, we don't know what he tells them. I'm sure he doesn't mention payment. And one who started work at that time would not expect the usual daily wage, especially not the ones who started at 5. They might only be expecting a meal for their troubles. They're definitely not expecting a full day's wage. And it might not seem like enough just to say that they showed up. But it is for the landowner here. And what do we know about what they were doing beforehand? What did they leave to start this work? Now, yes, it was work for a shorter amount of time, but it was still work. When the landowner addresses them in the marketplace, he says, why were you standing around idle all day? And this word idle, we know it today. It's not used as much, sort of antiquated, and I associate it with a car idling. Standing still, just sputtering, which is the sense here. They're just standing, they're not doing anything. Now, it could refer to illicit activity. They could be drinking in a pub or just lying around sleeping or other things that are easier and more pleasurable than working in a field. But it's important to realize that they did leave this idle behavior and they sought. They sought this landowner. And that's enough here. No one in this parable is perfect, the workers at least. Even the ones who show up at 9, it's interesting, the landowner still calls them idle. He goes at 9 o'clock, which we think a respectable time. You show up for work at 9, you get a pat on the back, good for you. But he says he saw them standing idle in the marketplace at 9. But he still offers them what is right. He says, I will pay you what is right. And then we know the ones at 3 and noon and 5, we know that they're not perfect because they're lazy and doing other things. But even the ones who show up at the crack of dawn, they're the ones who are complaining at the end of the parable. They're the ones who are grumbling against the master saying, wait a minute, they're bargaining. I want more. I did more. I deserve better. And yet, nonetheless, these last are treated as first. And the first are treated as last. If we look at it another way, let's turn to our favorite disciple, Peter. Peter's always interesting to look at. His life and journey with Christ is such a fascinating journey. And we see where it starts. It starts at a lake near Galilee. And Peter's a fisherman. And Peter is casting his net and working with the fish and his net. And Jesus comes along and he says, "Come, follow me." And Peter does. And then throughout Peter's journeys with Christ, they're together for a long time. Peter has a number of occasions which are faith-shattering, brilliant revelations. It's amazing to see a human being comprehend the fullness of Jesus' godness. But we also see a lot of cases where Peter's an absolute bonehead. And we have to reconcile these two ways that Peter operates, especially when we think that Jesus calls Peter again and again. It's not just one instance where he called him at the Sea of Galilee. He went to Peter multiple times. He said, "Peter, who am I?" Peter says, "You are the Christ." And then he calls him to be the rock of his church. And again, after Peter denies Christ, once again, Jesus calls Peter to be his leader. And the last time Peter and Jesus are together, they're at the same lake on the shores of Galilee. And Peter is once again tending to his nets and fishing. It's the same place we started with Peter. It's the same place we leave him. Christ says, "Come, follow me." And Peter follows him until his martyrdom. And maybe that's what this parable is about. Maybe it's not about a bunch of workers all working at different times in the vineyard. Maybe it's about one worker. Maybe it's about the individual. The first thing we do in our lives, maybe the first time we're aware of Christ's ministry, we're aware of Christ's power in our lives, we hear Christ calling and we accept and we say yes and we go and we work with Christ. But then maybe we stray. It's a hard field to work in, for sure. Maybe we find ourselves somewhere else. But eventually we go back to that square where we first met Peter, or where we first met Jesus, the landowner here. We finally make our way back, and Christ calls us again. He says, "Come, work in my field." But again, it's a hard vineyard. We stray again, maybe this time longer. Maybe even until the twilight of our days. But the fact remains, at that point, we still return with the same seeking. We're still seeking out that Christ when he first called us. Whether it's the first time he calls us or the 100th time he calls us, Christ is there. We are seeking him, and Christ is there calling us. This is a relationship. It's one that is not easy. We have to work through the heat of the day. Even the work at the end of the day is not easy. It is cheap by no means. It requires sacrifice. And it requires the fortitude to seek again and again. We do not just hear Christ once and go from there on the same path, sure in ourselves. And if we do, we're deceiving ourselves. At the end of the day, when all of the laborers are assembled, no matter what our relationship with Christ, no matter how long it's happened, no matter how long it's been going, when we seek him in earnest, in the truth of our hearts, when we seek his presence, we will receive the daily wage, which none of us deserve, because we all start at 5 o'clock sometime. But it's the wage that all of us are privy to. It's the only wage we ever need. It's the wage we've worked for our entire lives. It's grace. It's the grace of God. Amen.